Hey, Mike, could you come over here a minute?
Sure, Dave. What's up?
Well, we're coming up on your one-year anniversary here at Apocalypse Video. And you know what? I'd just like to say you've done a great job so far.
Thanks, Dave. I'd like to think that I provide a cultured and an intellectual viewpoint on film.
Yeah, shut up. It's time for your annual employee review.
My review?
Oh, yes! Is it employee review time already?
I know. I'm super pumped, too. I feel like it's been forever since the last one. I thought about making it a quarterly thing, maybe even weekly, but that'd just make it too good. It'd be too much of a good thing, you know?
Yeah, you're probably right. It'd be like celebrating Christmas more than once a year. It'd cheapen it.
What exactly happens in this employee review?
Duh, of course. How silly of me. This is your first one. Well, let me break it down for you. Chad, would you mind setting the mood, please?
Affirmative.
As part of your annual employee review, you must compete in a tournament of martial arts, comprised of the deadliest fighters in all of the wasteland.
What? This is crazy! Do you guys have to do this tournament every year, too?
Mike, we're the owners of the store. We don't have to do shit.
Yeah.
You know, it would have been nice if you'd included this in the job description.
Giving sass to your boss. Not a good start to your review.
In the not-too-distant future, four movie fans awaken from a nuclear nightmare, only to discover that the world is a barren, movieless wasteland. However, the destiny of our four heroes is not set. A chance discovery in Sector 2, and an unfortunate accident that rips the very soul from one of their own, will lead them down the path of bringing the lost art of cinema back to the wasteland.
Welcome to Apocalypse Video.
This year's lineup of combatants is brutal.
Is Bone Crusher gonna be here this year?
Someone say Bone Crusher!
Whoa, Jesus!
Yeah, Bone Crusher! Can I have your autograph?
Bone Crusher doesn't give autographs, kid. You'll have to check out my Patreon page!
Aww.
Thanks for coming in, Bone Crusher. We're happy to have you at this year's Slaughterfest employee reviews. Why don't you head over to the break room while we set everything up? We put out some weights, some protein powder, and Slim Jims for your enjoyment.
Oh yeah! Salty snacks and protein powder!
Right that way. Thank you.
Man, did he get bigger since last time?
The guy loves to lift.
This is crazy! How the hell am I... What the...
Ah, and here's our next entry. Straight from the Cyber Samurai Dojo in Sector 12. Yojimbo Joe! Watch out for his cyber slash. It's deadly.
Why are all these guys just randomly showing up now?
They're on speed dial. And next, we have the most barbaric barbarian in all of the wasteland. You know him, you love him. Former employee of Apocalypse Video, Cody the Destructor.
Cody, I thought we were friends.
True, but you have to survive Slaughterfest if you want to prove to me that you're worthy of my former post.
Fuck?
Indeed. Well, let's keep it going, shall we? From the Terra Nest on Mount Doom, we have Wingspan!
Wingspan? From, like, the Paul McCartney album?
Lame. From the depths of the radiated jungle, Lion Man!
Wow, these names are next level.
Ah, but this has all been child's play compared to our last combatant. The deadliest man in the wasteland. The sickest, most depraved killer this side of Bullet Farm, and one who doesn't take prisoners, he eats them. I give you Steve.
Oh, hi, guys.
Ooh, chilling.
I have no idea what is happening right now.
Ah, fair point. Mike, I realize this must all be overwhelming for you. And like I said, we like you around here. It's with that in mind that I'm going to do you a little favor, my friend. Before the employee review begins, I figured we'd screen a little instructional video so that you can prepare for the onslaught that is about to occur. Maybe you'll be able to glean something useful from this that will help you defeat your enemies today.
I wonder if they're hiring at Netflix. They're still around, aren't they?
Fat chance, Mike. Chad, load Enter the Dragon, trailer 1. And let the review commence.
Hi-ya.
Roper, Williams, and Lee, the Deadly Three, penetrate the secret chambers of an evil island empire.
What do you know about Han? He lives like a king on that island, totally self-sufficient.
A fortress without walls, protected by an invincible army that needs no ordinary weapons. This is Enter the Dragon, the first martial arts film produced by a major Hollywood studio. John Saxon is Roper. He was in it for the money. U.S. karate champion Jim Kelly as Williams. He was there because he had no choice. Black Belt Hall of Fame, undisputed martial arts champion, and international film star Bruce Lee. His job was to get them out alive.
I'm hoping you'll join us, represent us in the United States.
You want me to join this?
Roper, Williams, and Lee. Just when they think they've broken the secret of the island, they find there is no escape from the inscrutable Han. Warner Brothers presents Enter the Dragon, where the world's greatest martial arts athletes meet the ultimate challenge with the most ancient and deadly of weapons, the human body. Enter the Dragon from Warner Brothers.
Hello, welcome to another episode of Apocalypse Video, bringing you the finest in cinema and martial arts mastery. I'm your host, Dave Snyder, and joining me this week as we prepare for the annual our annual employee reviews, our fellow cinephiles and warriors in their own right, Ryan Bighead Caldwell.
Feel.
Special guest and friend of the show, Cody.
Hello. I don't have a cool intro. That was a good one, Ryan. I didn't think about it. I wasn't prepared.
Chad, the Whopper Griner.
When there's an opportunity, I do not hit. It hits all by itself.
Ooh, well said, Chad. And finally, Mr. Criterion himself, Michael Althaus.
I said to use emotion, not to be angry.
And if you're unaware, old Mr. Criterion here is about to celebrate his one-year anniversary with us. And as such, he is required to compete in Slaughterfest, a.k.a. Employee Reviews. Now, because this is his first time, and we like him, we decided to screen Enter the Dragon before the slaughter begins, so Mike can at least brush up on some things, techniques, whatever, that may help him pass his review. So that said, I guess I'll start the discussion by asking you, Mike, what did you learn from Enter the Dragon?
It's not looking good for me. That's what I learned.
As we were watching this, like, I was kind of, like, thinking about you, Mike, and, like, I was watching this and thinking, like, which character in this movie would be Mike right now? And I think it's the guy that, like, runs away from the giant guy as they're, like, Mike guards acted incompetently. I pictured Mike being the one to be, like, la, 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 run away.
Thanks, Dave.
And then gets his back broken eventually.
Squeezed.
Yeah, you know, either that or Bruce Lee. You know, one of the two.
Either one or the other.
One end of the spectrum.
Yeah, Enter the Dragon, man. So I have seen this movie a million times. I used to love this movie as a kid, but what about you guys? Is this the first for any of you?
My first time watching it.
Oh, okay.
So my first time as well.
I think it's probably my first time watching it all the way through. I've definitely caught bits and pieces of different Bruce Lee movies on TV in the before times, and then also I've definitely watched like the highlight reel of this movie on YouTube.
So this is definitely a gif-able movie.
So that's my, this is the first time I've watched it all the way through, I would say, for sure.
Awesome. All right. Sweet.
It's like we talked about this during Convoy, but this is like much more of a thing. But it's wild seeing this for the first time and just being like, oh, so that's what like all that culture was from, like Street Fighter, Mortal Kombat.
Oh yeah, it all pulls
Bloodsport
for sure. Mortal Kombat 100% is movie.
Dragon so Ball.
Yeah, like,
you know, it's, you know what's ironic, Mike? As this is your 1 year review, we're essentially reviewing the same movie that you started your tenure at Apocalypse Video with. I mean, for all intents and purposes, it's basically the same movie, Mortal Kombat: Enter the Dragon.
Yeah. I mean, there's less demons in this one, but
I mean, can you know that for sure? Because Han has a weird, like, claw, furry claw like, hand.
Terra hand. He has, like, a Terra claw.
Don't even insult the Terra people with that hideous thing that he uses.
That weapon, that's funny. He pulls it out of, like, a treasure chest, but it's just, like, a plank. Like, it's, like, a 2x4 with nails.
It's the worst-looking one of all the ones that he has.
Definitely, it is, yeah.
Yeah, it has, like...
I was half expecting to see, like, an Edward Scissorhands hand, like, in his display case.
Well, he had his hand over the skeleton. He's like, it's a souvenir.
Yeah,
or something.
His
like
actual hand.
Yeah.
Are they implying that like he cut it off? Like he did this intentionally?
No, I think he lost it and then he like rose to power and then got his hand back.
I guess my thought is if he lost it in a fight, he wouldn't be in a position to like grab the hand and take it back. But maybe it was like in a tournament or something like that.
The thing is, when you have a bone hand like that, you can pop it onto your wrist and then charge it with your soul energy. And it'll create what's called a soul fist. So he probably was more powerful after, you know, getting it removed.
Yeah, I figure like a demon took his hand or something of his soul, you know. It's like a representation of his soul that's been taken from the demon in an island, you know. And he's there keeping the flame going or something. I don't know.
Yeah, he's keeping the torch lit. Yeah. Keeping the light.
Well, Mike, so we're talking about the main villain. Let's get into the synopsis for anyone unaware. Mike, I'm going to give this duty to you to explain Enter the Dragon. I want to see how much you learned.
It's pretty complicated. Bruce Lee, as Mr. Lee, he's training. He's a martial artist. And he's in this school. It's kind of early, at the very beginning is told by his teacher, you know, hey, by the way, there's one guy who rejected everything that a martial artist should do and went down the opposite path, and his name is Han. And he's hosting a tournament on his evil island.
A tournament! He does it once every 3 years, and you gotta go.
Once every 3 years, just like the Dragon Ball tournaments. no coincidence, I'm sure. We meet some characters who are going to this tournament. There's an American who's a martial artist, and you see him being hassled by the racist American police.
That's Williams, Vietnam War veteran Williams.
Vietnam vet Williams. And then there's like a white professor-looking dude.
Professor, what?
No. He's the rich guy. He's out on the golf course, and his secretary is taking his like golf course like phone that's like attached to the what's that
Roper.
Thing
so you know he's rich
he's rich, and he beats up like the mob, I guess, is like after him for debts. And anyway, so
not rich,
we meet all these characters.
Yeah. He's a rich lifestyle. He's not rich.
Con man.
Yeah, so far you're describing this character as a rich professor. I don't think that's correct.
Also, this isn't the plot of the movie. Like, I don't know what
Mike,
you're doing.
His name is
also isn't important to the plot of the movie.
His name is Roper. He is a fellow Vietnam War veteran with Williams, and he is a con man. Right?
Well, the point is, we meet all these characters, and then they go to the tournament, and we see the tournament happen.
And there's some shady shit going on that tournament island.
Yeah, Han, the evil guy running the tournament, is trying to do some shady shit. He's trying to recruit his team.
Well, it turns out that Mr. Lee did I miss something? Is he a secret agent, or is he like part of the government?
He's working.
He's not a secret agent.
He's working with a private organization that acts to gather information to sell to other states.
Now you got it.
Interested parties who may or may not do stuff with this information.
It's very vague, and I think because this movie was like released worldwide, I'm wondering if like they didn't want to attach it to any one country so that, like,
that could, yeah,
people that makes sense. In, you know, watching in the USSR, like, oh, fuck this American, like, you know, it's just a guy gathering information on bad guys on an undisclosed island.
good call. Yeah, that's you're probably absolutely right.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. Oh, and the other part of the story that I left out is
that's one thing I like to do with these episodes is get Ryan's quote for the poster, and this one is simply just yeah ... it's cool. And speaking of cool, like, the opening for this movie, like, sucks you in immediately. You get, like, this fight with Bruce Lee and one of the other students at this Shaolin temple. Wearing, like, their black little Speedos and really cool gloves. Like, I really love the gloves
they're wearing. early progenitors of, early versions of what will become MMA gloves in, you know, in the past.
No eye pokes with these gloves. You're going to get no eye pokes for any MMA fans out there. But it's a great fight. He does some amazing stunts in this movie. During this fight with this guy, he does this move. I'm not sure how practical it is, what the use of it is, but he does this move. As the guy's coming at him, he, like, backflips, does, like, a sort of, like, a handstand type thing, jumps back, and punches the guy. And I'm thinking to myself, why?
It's deflects on him, dude.
It's the momentum.
But he doesn't deflect anything. It's basically, like, he does this little backflip handstand.
No, not deflect. Flex on him. It's to show him how powerful he is.
Look how cool I am.
Exactly.
I think it might also, like, work to be like, you don't know what your opponent's gonna do. Like, I have no idea what this guy
is
doing.
Well, it's like, as I'm watching this, if I'm the other guy, as he's doing his little backflip handstand, I would have just kicked him over.
You wouldn't, Dave, because you have no idea what he's about to do. You don't. Well, like,
true. You know what? I think Mike learned a lot from this movie.
Oh, okay. Well, see, this is why I'm glad I'm the manager and I don't have to partake in these employee reviews. I'm above them. But yeah,
me too. Somehow.
Opening. Well, you know, one of the founders.
I'm grandfathered
Ryan,
so. In. Yeah.
Ryan, I think you should just accept that it's an offering Dave has given you. It's a kindness, and you should not look it in the mouth.
Yeah,
Ryan's already, like, lost his head multiple times.
Yeah, at this point, he's just mostly held together by stitches and live wire.
Yeah,
he's in no position to compete in the Kumite.
I always forget, you know, Ryan, I visit so infrequently, I just, every time I come back, there's always something like, oh, there your hand just fell off, you should probably put that back on.
I have no idea what you guys are talking about.
It's all right, though, you can make a soul fist now, so that's cool.
Hell yeah. But yeah, an amazing opening, and I think, I can only imagine, because I'm not exactly sure, I gotta imagine that, so this is 1973 when this came out. Bruce Lee had been making his movies over in China for, I think, 2 or 3 years at this point. He'd already done, like, 3 movies up to this point, I believe, 3 or 4. And I would assume that they would have maybe come over at this time to the United States. Maybe people had seen him. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Yeah,
but in any event, I got to imagine this was probably the first Bruce Lee movie for a lot of Americans.
Well, he was born in San Francisco. And he's, and so, like, I think he's kind of a guy that went to, you know, Hong Kong and stuff and made movies, you know. And
well, no, I just mean, like, aside from the Green Hornet, which he'd done a few years prior to this, like, this was, like, no one had ever really seen him do this, like, in anything in America.
Yeah, he from reading on the Chattopedia, like, he was famous, but this was definitely his biggest movie. Like, this adjusted for inflation, this made $1 billion when it came out.
What? Wow. Holy shit!
Yeah,
and it pretty much jump started like, this whole, you know, martial arts movies in America, as, you know, like a whole
and around the world.
Martial arts movies around the world, yeah.
I mean, this looking about it, this was, I mean, it was successful in America, but, like, that quote of $1 billion is throughout the world, and it was, like, a huge success, worldwide. Like, it seems like there were lots of territories that were way into this, maybe more than America was.
But I mean, this pretty much started everything. It wasn't technically the first, but it pretty much started everything. And, like, everything is here. All the tropes of martial arts movies of that era are in this movie, especially, and one of my favorite things about martial arts movies of this time are the sound effects.
Oh, my God, the sound effects in this are so good. They are incredible. And that, talking about another thing where you're like realizing a missing link, in reading about this, Street Fighter specifically was like, basically they were trying to make this movie like as a video game. And I always loved the sound effects in that game. And watching this, I'm like, oh, those are like video game recreations of the sound effects in Enter the Dragon. That's exactly what these sound effects are. They're Street Fighter.
It's like that body hitting the dirt sound effect is used so much that it's like you place it in here, you know, Chad, when you get to it. But it's just that like, ka-kum. And that's used in video games still, I feel like.
It's just every punch sounds so like,
cool. Like a board is snapping.
Yeah, like a whip or something.
But like, oh man, I can't imagine being the guy, the Foley artist, who made the sound effects for these movies, only to find out that they would be used for all of these movies for like decades on. Like,
they probably used before, maybe, right? I don't know.
They were used in Lee's earlier movies, but yeah. They really do set the stage and put you. They just. As soon as I hear those sound effects, I'm just boom. I fucking love it. And it's also like interesting. I lost my train of thought. So the dubbing. That's where I wanted to go. The dubbing. Another trademark of these movies is the bad dubbing, which we get instantly.
Apparently, yeah. The whole movie was filmed without sound, and then everything else was done over.
Yeah. Okay. So everyone was dubbed. Like sound effects were dubbed. It's all dubbed. Interesting choice,
gentlemen. You have our gratitude.
And you know what? It's interesting is that you caught on to like sometimes there's bad dubbing, and that's because sometimes it's fine. Like sometimes it is it seems well enough.
It's close enough.
It's just weird sound. But the whole movie was filmed
Bruce Lee are being dubbed by themselves, but there's some characters who were dubbed by
like his master sounds like a surfer bro. He's just like yeah man.
Yeah, man.
It's like Michelangelo.
The ways of the Shaolin.
The tournament happens once every 3 years, and you gotta go.
I see your talents have gone beyond the mere physical level. Your skills are now at the point of spiritual insight.
Spiritual enlightenment?
Your power level is over 9,000.
Oh, man. It's interesting. Like, that's as we were watching it, so we watched what's dubbed as the special edition version of this movie with... 3 extra minutes of footage, namely that scene when he's talking to his teacher. Basically, it's the scene where the teacher gives the backstory, like, this is why Han is a bad guy, and this is why you should not like him.
Right.
You, Mr. Lee. But it's interesting. That entire scene was not in the theatrical cut.
And, you don't need it.
I don't think you do.
It really could just be some, you know, posh spy guy going, hey, we need you to enter this tournament for us.
Well, all you need is that line where the guy who gathers information, Mr. Braithwaite. All you need is that line of him telling Mr. Lee, like, oh, I believe he was a former student of your temple, wasn't he? And then it cuts to Lee. He's like, yeah. You know?
We've all seen Enter the Dragon, so we know that once there's a former student involved, it's going to be a bad guy.
But yeah, we get it. It's like you can fill in the blanks there. Plus this whole backstory scene, like knowing that it's like an added in scene, like it kind of slows the pacing down in the movie right after we get that amazing introduction to Bruce Lee at that fight scene. I feel like it kind of slows the movie down a bit. I mean, it's funny in the sense of being like a funny or like a cheesy martial arts scene where he talks to his teacher and he's like, oh, you are in spiritual alignment, blah, blah, blah. Like, it's funny in that sense, but it really slows the pacing down.
I don't think it slows it down that much because it's the beginning of a movie. Most beginning of movies are slower, you know? Well, it's just this movie starts with a bang and then it's like, okay, but we got to start the movie for real.
Well, I guess I'm just comparing it to the theatrical cut because it's like, I feel like it flows a little better in the theatrical cut. It gets you to the main titles like, wow! You know, like it gets you there faster and it's just it's a bit more paced.
It's a great title card, by the way. We didn't mention that.
Oh, fuck yeah.
Yeah. Even then, there's later stuff in the movie where it slows the movie down a lot. Like when they're actually approaching the mainland before they get on the junk to go to the island.
All the flashbacks.
And we get each character's flashback.
Oh, I love that, though. I didn't think that was slow because it was like within those, it was interesting. Like
little
the story.
Moments.
I'm not sure that they all were as interesting as they could have been. Williams was good. Roper's was kind of like, oh, I'm golfing. Oh, I go into a bush and I get attacked by guys.
That was great. I love that.
It's fine. I just think it's a little slow.
It's a little bit like clunky, but awkward. I
mean, it's just
I don't
different. I don't know. I feel like it's paced well, though. I think it's paced very well.
Well, you better not take that attitude to your fights because you're going to get beat up.
Can we talk about like Bruce Lee a little bit? I don't know.
Let's do it.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was going to come up, Brian.
Yeah.
I thought this was just going to be all about Mr. Roper, man.
Yeah.
Did you guys see his phone?
He's got a golf phone.
Professor Roper.
Like, how much experience do you guys have with him, really? Like,
this is my first, seeing him in a movie.
Wow.
Oh, wow.
Same. This is my first movie of his that I've watched. I did watch back in the before times. There was a 30 for 30 documentary on Bruce Lee called Be Water. And I watched that before I watched any of his movies.
Yeah, I watch more YouTube videos than
he's incredible. Like I was kind of like taken aback by, like, I don't know. It's one of those things you see it and at least for me, I was like, oh, okay. Like almost immediately that first fight scene, it's like, oh, I get it. This guy's like superhuman. Just, he's so fast.
I've been reading. He's all eyes, that guy.
I've been reading the old texts. And by that, I mean Dragon Ball. It is crazy how much, like Akira Toriyama has said, Goku, especially when Goku gets older and becomes like Super Saiyan, that he basically just made him Bruce Lee from Enter the Dragon. And it's crazy, like little things in there.
But he's not
you
goofy.
See that.
Like,
no, he's not. But that's why I mean when Goku's like, think of Goku like staring at Frieza, you know, like when he's fighting, not him at like the Kame House.
That's when he's Jackie Chan.
But yeah, that's when he's Jackie Chan. But
I don't want trouble.
There's like a constant thing in the manga of like how fast Goku is, and like when he's fighting, like, oh, I can barely see his movements, and that's something that like watching this, I'm like, strikes me the most about Bruce Lee is like these, and especially the way the fight scenes are done, where it's not cutting away a bunch, it's not frenetic editing, it's pretty much just on it. But he is so fast that oftentimes it's difficult to kind of discern what's happening, but in like a cool way.
And it's funny you mentioned that, Mike, because they literally had to slow the film down in order to really register his punches.
Oh, that's so cool. That's all. Yeah. That's the thing. That all this is to say, the big thing that stood out to me in this is like Bruce Lee is so fast, like, and this fighting is so like explosive in a way that seems really unique.
Yeah,
revolutionary, man. Like, there's nothing like this prior to this movie that I can think of. No movies where it's like, I mean, there were like the closest thing I can think of, sort of, is on a big blockbuster scale is maybe like You Only Live Twice, that Bond film where like he goes to Japan and there are ninjas. That's like the closest.
That's my favorite Connery Bond, though, you know.
I'm just thinking, like, was there anything like this prior to this movie? And I really don't think there was. Like, this is just the first of its kind. I mean, obviously there were the movies that Bruce Lee did before this movie, like a year or two prior, but I just mean like in a big sense, like on a world scale where everyone saw it. This was kind of like the first thing that a lot of people probably saw of this type of movie and this type of martial arts. And it's just, it's insane. Like, it holds up. Like, I'm not watching this thinking like, oh, that's like early martial arts. I've watched YouTube videos. I've seen a lot cooler shit than Bruce Lee. No, but it's still amazing to watch. Like, it's incredible.
Because I kind of grew up, I was always kind of, we were growing up when it was like peak Jackie Chan kind of thing.
Yeah.
And
Rumble
so,
the Bronx, baby.
Yeah. So that was more like in my rotation, I feel like, than he was. I feel like I just missed him a little bit, Bruce Lee. It didn't really have anybody like introduce his stuff to me kind of thing. So I feel like if I would have saw
Bruce
this
Lee,
as a kid, it would have been something I just was blown away by.
Bruce Lee also just has like, he never had like his career wasn't as long as Jackie Chan because he died. So Jackie Chan was able to make a lot more, like he made that pivot in the 90s to like almost like kids movies and stuff. Yeah. It was a cartoon show,
more
the Jackie Chan cartoon show.
Yeah. Jackie Chan Adventures. Respect the name.
The Jackie Chan could have gotten his own animated series if he'd lived.
I think Bruce Lee had an animated series, actually.
I think
there was like
a
Bruce Lee like and Power.
He was probably in like Scooby Doo or something, you know? Like,
oh, 100%. Yeah. I want to say Bruce Lee for us was very much like he's your daddy's action hero. Like, not action hero, but he's your daddy's martial arts guy. Like, he's the dude. I remember him being the guy that it's like the older relatives would be like, oh, Bruce Lee, though, because I'm watching Jackie Chan movies. You know what I mean? And they're like, oh, Jackie Chan's cool, but he's nothing like Bruce Lee. Yeah. And I think that's very much based off of just this first scene with him where he's shredded and he's torn up and he's doing these crazy flips and hitting, whereas Jackie Chan, he's never usually looking that shredded. And it's,
he's more of a stunt guy. Hitting.
You know, Jackie Chan was in this movie?
More of a stunt guy. Yes.
Is yeah, he's a stunt guy.
His neck broken by Bruce Lee.
Oh, wow. Did not
he's
know
the
that.
Guy. You'll remember this. It's during that the probably like the best action scene in the movie when he's
oh
in the
god one
or
of the best action scenes of all time. Fight. That was incredible.
Oh, yeah. It's the scene when he like grabs the guy, holds him, kicks another guy, and then it zooms in on Bruce Lee's face and he goes,
okay.
Breaks the guy's neck. That was Jackie's neck.
And in that scene, Bruce Lee actually hit Jackie Chan in the face with one of his fighting sticks.
Oh no!
And just smacked him. And he apologized. And he said, you know, he told Jackie Chan that he was so sorry that he would be in every movie of his from then on.
Oh,
unfortunately,
damn.
But you know what? Hey, we got Jackie.
Yeah. Well, yeah. He was in pretty much every Chinese martial arts movie. Like,
yeah, Jackie Chan did fine.
I mean, Jackie Chan did a shitload of movies. Not long after this, I think he started making movies in the early '80s, I believe, or something like that. Maybe even
'70s. Yeah, I think late '70s was like Drunken Master and stuff. I'm guessing, wasn't it?
Yeah. So Jackie Chan did fine.
Yeah, Jackie Chan.
You don't need to worry about Jackie.
But
don't
I just
worry about Jackie.
Yeah, it's just interesting. Yeah, he was our kind of guy and. Missed Bruce Lee. I guess you're right. If Bruce Lee was around longer, maybe we would have been more, seen him more.
It's crazy. I mean, this was released after his death, and he was 30.
Was it?
Yeah.
A month after
yeah.
he died.
He collapsed during his dubbing, when he was dubbing this in Hong Kong.
Wow.
He didn't die from that. Like he collapsed and was, it basically was in a situation where he was like, he had like brain swelling going on, but it was treated incorrectly. And he got like, when they gave him like these painkillers or whatever, he had an allergic reaction to it and he died. And he was 33.
I think, 32 or 33.
So he would have had like a long career ahead of him and probably would have had some pivot to like, you know, comedy or who knows what.
Well, he kind of already sort of touched his or dipped his toe in that. There's a movie he did a year prior to this one called The Way of the Dragon. It's the famous one where he fights Chuck Norris in the Roman Colosseum. like that movie has some humor in that. Like in the beginning of the movie, there's like it literally has like fart humor in it. Like where he's like his stomach rumbles and like there are several instances in the movie where he's like, I gotta go to the bathroom. So like he dipped his toe. Like apparently he was like a big fan of slapstick.
Well,
so,
his family, he comes from a family of actors and they did like slapstick kind of performances.
Well, the skills of a martial artist would transition well into that kind of stuff. Like as Jackie Chan showed.
I would have loved to have seen that pivot. And like one of the things I always lament, like Quentin Tarantino said, like if Bruce Lee had lived, like he's who he would have cast as the Bill character. That would have been so fucking cool to see.
Yeah.
Kill Bill, that character, by the way, David Carradine.
Yes.
It's
ironic.
Plays the, what is it? The Journey Continues or whatever. The
Kung Fu
Kung
character,
Fu,
which
was
supposed
a series,
to be
It's a
Bruce
series
Lee.
Written by Bruce Lee. And they tried to sell it, and they're like, oh, Hollywood's not ready for an Asian leading man. This is in the 70s. And then he dies, and then later they cast David Carradine in the lead role.
Wow.
Yeah, it's Holiday. Yeah, I think, Quentin, you're going a little heavy with the meta stuff there.
it's kind of funny. But, I wanted to read part of this little review. I talked about this in the Convoy, one of Pauline Kael's review of it. So, you know, she had she was that New Yorker.
So are you reading still from the Convoy review?
No, yeah, right. That was still going.
Hey guys, I just wanted to dip back into the Convoy review. I didn't get to finish all of it.
10-4, good.
But you're talking about Quentin, and I feel like this is like the type. Her review feels like the Quentin, like talking about a Quentin Tarantino movie a little bit. It says Bruce Lee and John Saxon in a kung fu movie that's a good-natured example of the pleasures of schlock art. There's so much going on. The whole history of movies seems to be recapitulated in scrambled form. It could be billed as the movie with 1,000 climaxes, but it's not all schlock. The slender, swift Bruce Lee was the Fred Astaire of martial arts, and many of the fights that could be merely brutal come across as lightning-fast choreography. Yeah, that's kind of her little quick.
That's a really apt description. The Fred Astaire of martial arts.
He's the Bruce Lee of martial arts. Fuck that.
Yeah.
So I thought that was nice.
Bruce,
just kind of like
Bruce Lee, man.
Like it's like the pleasure of schlock, you know?
Yeah.
Well, it definitely is like because we were kind of talking a little bit before we started recording, Cody. Like because you were one thing you said that I thought kind of stuck with me. Like, it's not a perfect movie, and it's definitely not a perfect movie. Like,
no, not
it's
yeah.
definitely has some flaws.
It's a little weird, but it rules.
It rules. Yeah, it's not a perfect movie, but it rules. As Ryan
said, I think
said,
the things cool. that you would look at it and say are bad work in its favor. Like yes, what is technically bad? The dubbing, but like, would you want it any other way?
It just ends, so it's just kind of like, I was like, I rewound it. I was like, did I miss something? I was like, did I fall asleep? I felt like I fell asleep or something when it ended. I was like,
they beat everybody up, and then a helicopter lands, and a soldier like gets out, and it's like, movie.
Yeah,
over.
What more do you want? Yeah,
exactly.
I just didn't know. I was like, that was it? Wow. You
won.
And I rewound
it. Well, that was kind of a thing, I feel, in the 70s. Like, movies just sort of ended.
Yeah, they're like, why blow the budget on anything else? Just wrap it up.
the end of Convoy.
It's happening. What's the
again?
Deal with, like, maybe you know this, David, but in like kung fu movies or like a lot, maybe even stuff in the 70s, stuff being slightly out of focus. Do you notice that? Like, there's like shots that are like of people, especially there's one in particular of like the head lady at the island that's like bringing the girls, and it's like on her, and it's just blurry. Like, it's like the
I think Cody, you mentioned something that maybe that was what they were going for in this scene. Why don't you explain?
Oh, I don't even remember.
Well, just to give people some context, when all the fighters get to the island, they go into their little rooms, and as the night goes on, the head mistress of the island brings in these, like, essentially prostitutes into the room.
I don't even think they're paid. It seems like they are sex slaves.
They're sex
slaves.
Which
is very weird.
Yes. That's one of these shady things that Mike was alluding to earlier, in addition to...
very James Bond.
It's very James Bond inspiration.
This movie is Dr. No. I mean, he fights a dude with a metal hand. He goes to a secret island lair. I think like there's like I feel like I don't know this for certain, but the theme music when it comes in, I feel like there's James Bond in the music somewhere. But
it's very inspired by that. But anyway, shady things including sex slaves and drugs, opium. So this is among the shady things that Han is doing, aka Solfist.
Real quick, I don't want to divert too much, but I have to mention that's one of my favorite scenes in the movie. Is Han is like talking to Roper? Is that the white guy's name? And he is like, it's before there's really been too much of a reveal that to everyone that Han is evil. And Han is like, Roper, let me take you down to my basement. And this basement is like just where everything evil is happening. Like, it's like one big room. And he's like, here's where I'm making the opium. Here's where my slaves are.
I think he was specifically making heroin.
It was opium. He says opium.
Yeah, he said opium.
He says opium because when Braithwaite picks people up, he says
heroin
that
overdose.
It's heroin overdoses that the bodies
but
are
he's, well, I mean, it, Han at least said he was making opium. Maybe there's another place where they're distilling it into heroin or something.
Hey, who knows?
But these vats we saw were opium. But anyway, I thought that was a classic scene, a very good of just like, and here's where I'm doing this, and here's where I'm doing this.
Why are you telling me this?
He is like, why are you telling me this?
Because he needs to replace Bolo or whoever is his scar-faced
O'Hara.
O'Hara. Yeah, he has to replace O'Hara. He's like, I need another buff white man on my team.
Mr. Lee killed O'Hara. I need a new O'Hara.
You have a golf phone.
Oh, by the way, you don't mind if we cut your face, right? You got
to
have a scar.
I really like the eye scar. It kind of does a lot for me.
But anyway, getting back to what Ryan was mentioning with the out-of-focus scene, Cody really made a good point. And it never occurred to me before. Like, I think it was just something that I was just sort of subconsciously aware of. But you pointed out that the scene, it's not necessarily that it's out of focus. It's that it looks like a 70s porno. The way that she's shot. It's interesting because when it cuts back to the other characters in the same scene, it's
clear
out of focus.
Yeah.
It's clear. But when it cuts to her, it's like we're shooting a porno.
There is a lot of like first person stuff, but I'm just saying like there's like this thing. I have this feeling that there's parts where they crop in and that's why it gets blurry. I think there's maybe like the shot was wider originally. And I feel like I see this in 70s movies and other kung fu movies I've seen where there's stuff out of focus. And I was thinking about like, why is that? Like, why would they even let that happen? But I'm guessing maybe in post they zoomed in and that's why it looks blurry. I'm thinking like
that
maybe
makes sense.
It was wider at one point and they just like, they like realized like, oh, we like the close ups and stuff. But I just found that interesting. I don't know.
And I agree. Like especially the scenes when Bruce Lee is fighting, and it's like, well, I think it seems like those scenes. I mean, the fight scenes were choreographed by Bruce Lee, so I feel like the push-ins in those moments are not out of focus because they were very much deliberate.
Those like shaky kind of push-ins that like I mean, it's like shitty to say this, but I think of I always think of Wes Anderson movies because he does them all the time, and I've seen more Wes Anderson movies. But I love it; it's so good. Every time it did that on Bruce Lee's face, it was like, oh man, I was like jumping out of my seat.
Yeah. Well, again, this feels like, again, it wasn't technically the first, but it really feels like the template for all the martial arts movies to follow. Like all those cliched moments are in this movie, and it just, again, even though some of the stuff may come off as cheesy, like I think it's to the benefit of the movie. Like it just sets you in the mood, and I just love it. It's great. It holds up in that sense. Like, again, it's just fun.
That's
how I'd describe it.
And that whole thing, we kind of skimmed over, but that whole scene where they're doing the flashbacks is like the men arrive on the boats and stuff in like the little harbor in, was it China? Or where was it? Hong Kong?
It was set in Hong Kong, but I think the island was like undisclosed.
Well, not the island, but like before they leave to the island.
Hong Kong.
Yeah.
Yeah, Hong Kong.
They really like let you kind of sit in there and like see like the people, and it zooms out real wide.
Yeah,
like,
there's some beautiful really cool cinematography. Yeah. Like,
I think it's really well shot. Yeah.
Yeah, better than I think the movie, like a movie like this usually would.
Better than a lot of like derivative kung fu movies. Look at a Chuck Norris movie. Is like, it's not going to have cinematography like this.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Again, like, I don't get the sense that this had a big budget necessarily, but compared to other martial arts movies, I would say it probably did. Like, it's a shot really well. Like some of the sets look like sets, but they look like well done sets. Like the you know, here's my basement,
the basement layer, yeah.
Where I do my evil shit.
At least the stuff outside, you know, location stuff.
Yeah,
it looks as good as like the James Bond movies of the era.
I would agree. Yeah, and I get that sort of vibe. Like, you know, we're showing like exotic locations and stuff for people who might not be used to seeing these types of locations. But I think it holds up like production wise too as well. I mean, when you compare it to other martial arts movies, you're like, oh yeah, this is like 10 steps above those.
Pretty cool.
But anyway, like, talking about those flashback scenes, like, just to sort of touch on the differences between the theatrical and the special edition, aside from that whole like, here's the backstory scene with your teacher, that being added, there's one other difference between the special edition and the theatrical version which I thought was really interesting, and it's the omission of music in a particular scene. So if you guys remember during the flashback for Williams, you know, he sees his karate teacher. There's like a wordless exchange when they're like, yeah, man, fuck yeah. And then he leaves, and then he gets like hassled by these two racist cops, a.k.a. cops. Basically, they're like, oh, you're going to Hong Kong via Hawaii? No, you ain't going to Hawaii. And he beats them up. And as he beats them up, we get this triumphant music like da 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 da. In the theatrical version, there is no music in that scene, and it plays a lot differently.
Yeah.
It almost plays like this is not a good thing that he's doing. Like, he's not, because in the music in the special edition, it's like he's like a fucking hero, like da 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 da. You know, it's, but with no music, I was like, whoa, what the fuck? Like, this has a whole different.
Interesting.
Like, I feel like the filmmaker's like attitude towards this scene is much different, and it's uncomfortable, like almost. You know what I mean? Like, I've only seen this, you know, I only recently watched the theatrical version, and it didn't have the music, and it caught me off guard because I had just been so used to seeing that scene with triumphant music. Like, yeah, fuck yeah, Williams is a hero. And with that music gone, I almost get the sense like the filmmakers had like a different attitude towards it.
When did the special edition come about? Do you know?
I want to say it was like the late 90s or like 2000.
Oh, wow.
Like the DVD release, maybe.
Yes. Yeah, for the DVD release, yeah. And for the longest time, that was the most widely available version. Kind of similar to, like, Star Wars. Like, you know, you never really saw the theatrical cut of Enter the Dragon or Star Wars, like, ever again. At least not in an officially put out.
Yeah, Cody, if you find that in the waste, by the way, if you find a Blu-ray of theatrical Star Wars, let us know.
Oh, yeah, I'll keep my eyes open. Yeah.
We're still looking for it all these decades later.
I mean, that or Avatar 2, yeah.
Hey, I got a pretty good line on Avatar 2. It's coming, baby. It's going to be quite a journey. I'm going to have to journey further into the waste than I ever have before. But when I come back, I'll have a whole trilogy of Avatar to bring.
Yes.
But yeah, I just thought that was an interesting omission.
Yeah,
I don't think it's an interesting omission. I think it's fucked up.
And it's fucked up.
It's very purposeful. The fact that it was that way for 20 years.
But I'm wondering. I mean, without the music, I don't know if that would necessarily play as like what he's doing is bad. I mean, I could see that playing as more just like this is an intense Well,
scene.
It felt
there's a lot of scenes in here that don't have music during the
fight.
I mean,
it felt bad because I'd only been used to seeing it in that triumphant way. So without the music there, like suddenly I was just like, is this supposed to be like a bad scene?
I don't think so. I mean, the cops are so obviously bad.
Well, yeah, that's true.
Like they're using like racial slurs and stuff, and like they're
which I've
like,
never heard before. I never heard Jig before.
I don't think that is actually like a. I'm not sure that one is a. known slur. I think
like a 70s.
I think it's like a movie
word.
Version of one. Yeah, I think it is.
I
was this jig? Is that what they say?
Yeah, I'm like I never heard that expression before.
Yeah,
I did. I definitely Chattopedia'd it during the movie when they said that. I was like, is this a real one? Like, and I didn't find anything on it.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway, I liked that. See the whole thing a lot, and that little dojo he goes to check out, says bye to his buddy or whatever. You know.
But, yeah, and like it's something cool about a movie from like 1973 is like you don't. It was probably really new for a lot of audience to like have characters like this, like have a black guy be this character, like an obviously like a Bruce Lee.
Oh, I'm a dirty liar. It definitely is. It was in a very long bolded section that I didn't recognize as text. It skipped from. Never mind. Yeah, 100%.
It's bad.
Yeah, because I recognized it as being a part of another one, another word. And I thought it was just shortened to this one. I was like, oh, okay, that's what it's referencing, which is a slur. But yeah, it definitely is. Woo!
So fuck those cops.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. I think you're right. Like, it would have been that scene would play different to different people, I think, without the music, I think, for sure. You know?
But it is interesting because, like you said, like, they clearly are bad guys.
Well,
I mean,
they clearly are. And I wonder, I don't remember off the top of my head. The Roper scene, when he fights those dudes, is there triumphant music for him? Because if there's triumphant music for him fighting off the,
I think there is.
Those guys, and then not for Williams, then that also...
I feel like that's...
I don't know. Well, in my mind, I'm thinking it's more just, like, serious. Like in, you know, in a movie where you drop the music out because, like, what's going on is, like, intense. And, like, this scene is, like, more... real than like the mob goons going after the guy on the golf course with this fancy like phone, like just you know cops harassing a black man in an alley. I don't know. I could see them taking the music out of that, almost feeling like it's disrespectful to have.
I could see that 100%. Because I mean, you know, Bruce Lee made this movie. He knows what it's like not to be able to have access to.
Yeah,
you know,
I don't think given the rest of the context of this movie, I don't think they would have been going for an angle of like, look at how bad William is for beating up these cops. Like,
right. I wonder if there was any. And this is all, you know, conjecture, so it doesn't matter really. I was gonna say I could see them doing that intentionally. I could see them also having music for it. I could also see that. When they took that movie to get, you know, released in America or whatever, there was like, hey, you can't depict people beating up cops like this as triumphant. You know, I could see there being some weird thing where it's like, but all these other movies do it or all this
has
it.
I think, though, that
no,
people
in
theaters,
like
I'm guessing, were like cheering during that whole thing.
Oh, fuck
100%.
Yeah. Especially when he steals the cop car. And,
and drives off.
I was cheering.
There's also a moment when a dog comes in and starts like biting one of the cops.
Oh, yeah, the dog comes because the dogs love bacon.
But yeah, it's interesting. I remember watching a special feature. It might have been on the DVD forever ago, but like they were, I think like someone was saying like there was sort of like a layer of racism going on, like Mr. Braithwaite, for instance. Mm-hmm. It's kind of a weird name. You're like Braithwaite, and supposedly this might be alleged, but the writer of the movie, again, I mentioned there's like a little layer of racism. He specifically picked the name Braithwaite because Bruce Lee had trouble saying that name, Braithwaite. You know what I mean? It was like a weird, it was like hard to pronounce for him.
Oh,
you know what I mean? And he kind of did that, supposedly did that because he like, you know, there's like this layer of racism going on.
What the fuck?
That might be alleged. I remember seeing that on like a special feature somewhere, but it kind of touches on just like, you know, like you said, like, you know, it was hard for like, for there to be like a leading Chinese actor in a movie at this time, like in America, like it's like,
I mean, I don't know if it ever was easy, but it was probably harder then than it ever was because there was never a Bruce, like there was before Bruce Lee. Bruce Lee was like the template to at least have something to reference.
Mickey Rooney playing a Chinese guy, you know, a couple years before this, you know?
And it's interesting, like one thing you pointed out, Cody, that you're at some point, I think we were like 40 minutes in, you're like, oh yeah, Bruce Lee's in this movie. Like at times it feels like he's not technically the leading actor. Yeah, it's kind of more like
the moment where he pops back up to do some stealthy stuff on the island with his one piece of kit, which is a rope.
It was rope in a bag.
Like after that before that it had been like three or four scenes of Roper Williams, Roper, and it's like, right, we're here to follow Bruce Lee. Why is he not always in the movie?
Well, like when in the main titles, it's like Bruce Lee and then John Saxon
equal billing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah,
it's like all these movies, like the Mortal Kombat's or the Street Fighters, you know, you got even Dragon Ball, you know, Goku might be the main guy, but you fall Krillin and Yamcha once in a while, you know.
I don't know. I'm not going to be that forgiving to it. I really think like you're here to watch Bruce Lee do crazy martial arts that you've never seen before. You're not here to see John Saxon punch a guy, like you really aren't. You know what I mean?
I don't know. I thought it was all good. Like the other people who are not Bruce Lee were great. Like.
Especially Jim Kelly, dude.
And having that, like,
Williams is number two for sure.
Without, if it was just Bruce Lee, if it was only Bruce Lee, I think you'd lose some of the context of, like, how good he is. And it helps to see other people that are good doing stuff. And then you see Bruce Lee.
They kind of keep him mysterious. And so he kind of, like, spikes when he comes on, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
Builds him up to a degree. But but knowing the context, you know, the racial context, like, of the time, like, I definitely kind of get a sense that it's.
And especially that this is his fifth movie.
Yeah.
He did four movies prior where he is the main guy. He's in the entire movie.
Yeah.
And they were gigantic smash hits in China and Hong Kong. And then they're like, all right, we'll make an American one, but you're not going to be the
lead.
You're going to be co-lead.
Co-lead.
Yeah. It's kind of, that's where it's like, fuck off. Like, give us the pure Lee, baby.
But I kind of see what you're saying. I also see your side, or your perspective, Mike, where it's
as
like,
a tournament. Having
as a tournament,
pure,
yeah. It almost kind of, it's a little bit more of an ensemble sort of, mm-hmm. and he's sort of the guy that ultimately is going to like, he's the one with really like propelling the story forward. He's the one there on a mission and all that stuff. But yeah, at times I can see why it's just like, you kind of think like, is Bruce Lee in the movie?
Well, especially because, you know, yeah, 100% it's an ensemble. There's a tournament going on, but the tournament's really only like three dudes and then like a couple random guys that we see that
Which
are already
like,
on the island.
Let's talk about the movie a bit. The
oh,
tournament.
Yeah, let's talk about the movie. Hey, have we talked about the movie?
Well, we're talking about the context and the actor and all that stuff. Let's talk about the movie. The tournament, for instance. Like, that was one thing that Cody and I really latched onto while we were all watching it was like, are there only four fighters in this tournament? But there are other times, like at the big feast scene, when presumably the fighters that were invited to the island are dressed like in these black and red robes. Mm-hmm. And like, obviously,
and you don't see them fight.
You don't see the other guys in those suits fight. So presumably there were more
fights going on.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we see the whole anywhere close to the whole tournament in the movie. Like, yeah. I think most of it's happening off screen.
Yeah, okay. I agree. I think it is happening off screen, but it's like also not really even hinted at that it's happening off screen.
Yeah.
You just see other fighters in that the feast in the beginning, and then it's like, who knows where
who
they are.
Who do not look like fighters, by the way.
Yeah.
You see, like, that one big bald dude, like, he catches the little thing. He's like, ha, ha, ha.
Oh, yeah, those girls with those darts and those apples. Holy crap, I got a boner from that.
Oh, dear.
You're going to have to edit that out.
Yeah.
No, you're going to have to edit it out.
Swing, 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 swing.
One of them takes it. She has a dart in her hand. She blows it, and then puts.
Yeah. That's Mai Ling. That's the secret agent who got lost.
Yeah, that's the other plot thread that falls away. That's the only
right.
Yes.
And the thing is, like,
I forgot.
Okay, back to what I was saying before we decided to talk about the movie for a second. was if it's an ensemble piece, you'd think everybody else would have equal like story motivation, equal momentum of like mm-hmm. what their plots are, and they do not at all.
No.
Roper's broke, so he's like, I'm gonna go fight in this island that I got invited to make money.
He's a bad gambler. He keeps saying, you want to bet?
Yeah. Williams, we don't know why, he just got invited and he's there to do it because he wants to prove that he's also rad. But
yeah,
it's weird that they don't have nearly as much plot going on for them aside from when Roper starts getting invited into the, you know, into the,
yeah,
the gang. But we keep cutting back to them doing stuff. It feels very much
no one really has a complete arc, really. Like, not one.
At all. But the only one who has the framework of it is Lee, but we lose so much of it because he's not in the movie half the time.
Yeah. It's like, it's interesting, like, I... That's actually one thing that Mortal Kombat improves upon.
Well, yeah, Mortal Kombat is a perfect movie. Yeah.
Well, it's like, you know, like, they at least, those characters at least have arcs. If you remember, Johnny Cage is there because he wants to be famous and be taken seriously. Sonya's there because she wants revenge on Kano and so forth. Like, those characters.
Kano's there because he works for.
those characters at least have arcs.
And there's a whole tournament and we watch them all fight.
Yes. Yeah, that's basically Enter the Dragon 2.0. Yeah. But this one, yeah, a lot less. Lee is the only one really that has a story. Like, and Roper is sort of brought in later. But, you know, here, you want to join my gang? But that's, yeah. But Jim Kelly, Williams, like, he has really done dirty in this movie, man.
He should have been the co-lead.
Yes, because he is, well, because obviously he's also a karate master.
Yes.
And for in real life, he was like a karate champ. And,
I think a way to streamline this movie might have been to just cut Roper's character and just have, like, the relevant stuff from that be Williams.
Yes, 100%. Yes,
I liked Roper, though. I don't know.
It was funny. I think the one thing I did like a lot about Roper is he does look out of place. Like, he looks like he's just like a businessman who's like, every time he fought, I was like, professor. Oh, I guess he can do martial arts stuff. But
yeah, that's a thought, right? Is like, the thing that's good about him or funny about him is when he looks out of place. Because he seems like so kind of confused about what's going on.
Relief.
But it's like, he shouldn't be there. Like, why would this guy invite, unless, you know what I mean? Like, he should have been coming along on William's coattails because he wants to find a way to make money to bet on him, not been invited specifically because he's a kung fu master who's also out of place. Like, that makes no sense.
Yeah. Well, to me, he's like, we got to get a white guy in there. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And he's cool. You know, he's very cool and like, he gets beat up, but he kicks that guy in the nuts.
Yeah.
We need someone for the audience to relate to.
We need Whitey in there.
Honestly,
he's the Whitey surrogate.
It really feels that way. Like, and while you're watching it, you might not be thinking that, but it's like, I did definitely like catch on to the idea. I'm like, oh, wait a second. Bruce Lee's been out of this movie for like 30 minutes. This is weird. Or 20 minutes. Not 30 minutes. But you know what I mean? Like, I definitely felt when he wasn't on screen that when he showed back up, you're like, oh, finally. Yes, this is what I'm here for. Taking a minute, you know, stepping away from it a moment and thinking about it, that's when it really, it all kind of falls apart where you're just like, now why is half of the movie these people when, they should have been condensed into one character?
Yeah.
If you still wanted to have Roper because he's out of place, you don't have him be the co-lead jujitsu guy. I mean, not jujitsu, but you know what I mean? You don't have him also be a martial artist. You stick with the two dudes who really are martial artists, Jim Kelly and Bruce Lee. You know, I mean, I'm sure John Saxon trained for sure, but you know, those two dudes have presence, Jim Kelly and Bruce Lee. Yeah. And the moments that they kind of share on screen together where, like, you know, he's sneaking around at night and he sees him. Okay, why is that not the thing that propels it further? Instead, Saxon, you know.
I would much rather see Bruce Lee and Jim Kelly at the end of the movie fighting off all
those guys.
How cool would that have been? And again, and not just to be clear, I don't dislike John Saxon's character in the movie. Like, he's fine, but, like, he didn't need to be there. It should have been Jim Kelly and Bruce Lee.
He's fine, but the time that he uses could have been better.
The thing is that one of them, I mean, somebody gets killed to raise the stakes. Kind of thing, you know.
Kill Williams's friend, Roper, who
the doofus.
Kill the doofus who shouldn't have been here in the first place, but came along anyways, and then got in over his head. He gets killed, and now there's fucking stakes.
He's the one that should have been chained. That was so brutal. Chained up, like hovering above like murky looking water. And mind you, this little water pit is surrounded by spikes.
Yeah.
I'm just like, why?
I was waiting for sharks to jump.
Yeah, I was waiting
up
for
out
me too.
Yes. Yeah, you're like, so is it a big thing of acid? What is he doing? He's like, oh, he just drops the body. You're like, Jesus.
It was very much like a Bond thing. Like, I have a little torture chamber over there with sharks and spikes. But he got done so dirty in this movie.
Cody, I have to ask you, because you are probably, out of all of us, more familiar with combat. What did you think of the fight and the fight stuff in this, the fight work?
Oh, it was all really great. I especially enjoyed, there's a moment in the movie where Bruce Lee gets put into an arm bar, and then he bites the guy's leg.
What's an arm bar?
That's Roper. That's Roper.
Roper
who
does John Saxon.
Yeah. So an arm bar is where it's a jiu-jitsu or a judo thing where, you take your opponent's arm and you have it between your legs. Your legs are going perpendicular over their chest, and your hands are gripping their wrist.
I know what you're talking about,
You know what I'm talking about? Yeah, so their elbow is usually like right in your abdomen or over your pelvis, and it allows you to extend your back backwards and hyperextend their elbow, like tearing apart tendons and shit like that. Very painful. And Bruce Lee, in a sparring session, once got put into an arm bar, and somebody says, what'd you think of that? Like, what would you do if somebody did that to you? And he's like, I'd bite him. And so that's why they put that in the movie. He's like, oh, yeah, you get put in an arm bar. And, of course, there's ways to get out of the arm bar that aren't biting the person. But, you know, I like that that's a thing he
does.
Like,
if Bruce Lee were in a UFC fight and someone handed him an arm bar, he wouldn't be able to bite them without getting disqualified.
Yes, he would have correct, yeah. He'd have to kick his legs out and kind of
You can't bite in UFC?
No, you cannot bite.
I thought it was all on the table.
It's no
ultimate fighting.
It's
man.
No holds barred, but no biting.
What about the biting school of martial arts?
What's that?
Oh, just the biting school of martial arts. Isn't
yeah.
It?
Well, yeah. What are the horses supposed to do? You know, like they come in there with their kicks and their bites. So aside from that, no, I really, like I said, I really enjoyed, especially the opening scene. They start off with that. And it's just funny because Bruce Lee is like, he's so in a different weight class from the guy he's fighting. The guy he's fighting yeah. doesn't.
Oh, look he looks like me.
He looks yes, yeah. He looks like me, and it's a rough look for that guy, unfortunately, because he also doesn't really get a moment to shine.
No.
It's just Bruce Lee just piecing him up, and then yeah. you know it's kind of funny. But no, it's great. I wish we had gotten more of it because the moments, and maybe it's because of the kind of you know the threads that get dropped when they get to the island, and it becomes like oh just sneak around the island. Like Bruce Lee sneaks around the island twice.
Yeah.
And neither one of them, the second one is what leads to actually the big combat scenes at the end.
Arguably one of the best action scenes.
But the first one doesn't really lead to anything. And so it's kind of like, well, fuck, just give us more of the tournament. Give us more fighting. Give us more of that. Of course, maybe if they'd done that, maybe the end fight wouldn't have been as baller because they'd used up all their, you know, their juice.
Yeah, and it's probably like really hard to just do these fight scenes. So that I imagine 100%. This is like all they had in them to do. Probably.
Yeah, and it was probably just like, we can fill this, you know, we can fill 10 minutes of you sneaking around the island because the way he moves is athletic. It's like watching him climb stuff and all that. That is impressive, watching him jump and things.
He's like music, a fly. You
know? Yeah.
A human fly.
Is one of the guys that's like one of the henchmen, he's kind of like a thicker Chinese guy. Is he in like Bloodsport or Kickboxer?
He's in Bloodsport. Bloodsport, yes.
I remember from the gif of him look like he's playing drums. He's like, ah. I've never seen that.
Yeah, that guy's like a bruiser for sure.
Yeah, his name is Bolo Young, and in this movie he plays a guy named Bolo.
Oh, that was actually just his name.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
In Bloodsport, he plays Chong Li,
yes.
also known as Chonk Li. No, I'm just kidding. I just made
really?
That up.
Really? I mean, a future... That's got to be a future episode of Apocalypse Video.
Oh, my good God. Hold on, I'm checking the... He's in a movie from 1977, so this is before Enter the Dragon.
No, after.
And it was after Enter the Dragon. Yeah. It's an action comedy. And it's just called Bolo.
What?
and it stars him as Bolo.
Oh, man.
Two convicts get freed from prison and become lawmen in a corrupt village.
All right, folks, that might be a potential double feature in the future. Bolo and Bloodsport.
They should just use like your real names in movies more often.
I thought that was so amazing. They're like, hello, Mr. Lee.
Mr. Lee.
But they never call him Bruce, so it's kind of like...
Did he have a first name? I just remember him being referred to as Mr. Lee.
He's just Lee. Yeah. He's just Lee in the credits.
Yeah.
They all go by their last names, I think, in the ending credits. It's like Lee, Willems, Saxton.
Rope Williams, not Willems.
Willems, yeah.
Somebody's been spending too much time on ChadTube.
Certain franchises, I think, would really lend themselves to using the real names. Like Fast and the Furious, if they just all use their real names, I think that'd be pretty cool.
I don't know, maybe not at this point, but you know. Yeah, no, there's... The thing about it is you use your real names when that person is really the thing they are. Like, when Bruce Lee is a real martial artist, you make him just Lee. Because then the movie has this, like, weird layer of, like, they just invited Bruce Lee to a tournament. They're just, you know what I mean? And that's cool.
They do the same thing with Jackie Chan. Jackie! Like, his name is Jackie in a lot of his movies.
Yeah. Hell yeah. It's a great name.
Yeah. It's just funny his name's Bruce. I don't know. Something funny about that.
Do you think if Bruce Lee had lived longer, he would have ended up doing a movie with, like, Arnold Schwarzenegger?
100%. Would he have been in The Expendables? Probably, yeah.
They probably would have done a movie sooner. He probably would have been in Conan the Barbarian.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking of, like Bruce Lee being like a character in Conan or something like that.
He probably would have played Subutai, Thief, and Archer.
Yeah.
It's interesting to think about where his career could have gone after this, because this is really just the beginning. Well, it's not technically the beginning. He had been like in Hollywood. He'd been
this
trying
was
to
the
get
breakout.
Over there. This was the breakout, yes. And it's really interesting to think where he could have gone from here. I mean, really, the sky's the limit. I feel like he could have done anything after this. Like as you said, this movie made, like, adjusted for inflation, $1 billion worldwide.
Yeah.
Like, he could have done anything at this point. But
I didn't look up the exact ranking, but I saw when it came out. It was, at that time, one of the most profitable movies ever made.
Yeah. I believe it.
I don't want to, real quick, using the Chattopedia here, I don't want to sell short shrift to anybody. John Saxon was a student of Bruce Lee, but...
A lot of Hollywood actors were.
A lot were, yeah. But I think you can still, in this one at least, in Enter the Dragon, it's still Williams kind of outclasses him pretty heavily for when sure. we do see him, is all.
Yeah, like everyone would go, he'd come over to people's houses. It's like in Once Upon a Time in Hollywood and just like teach him stuff. Kind of a hippie, Bruce Lee.
I saw too that he got into multiple real fights with people on set making this movie.
I saw that an extra challenged him to a fight, yes, to see if he was really good.
It's like, yeah, it's like, we'll see how good he is. Like, it just seems so weird. I
that rules. That rules. It's like Dragon Ball, like Mike talks about nonstop. It's like Dragon Ball. It's like when you are a badass and you meet another badass, you're like, I gotta know how I stand up to this badass. You know, mm-hmm. like, we gotta know. It's great. It's great.
There's a scene in this movie that, like, is very, it's very, very Dragon Ball and very much like what you were just saying, Cody. It's when they're on the boat and they're, like, on the way to the island. And the one guy, like, goes up to Bruce Lee and he's like, oh, you think you're so good? Like, let's fight. Let's fight now. And Bruce Lee's like, okay, well, you want to get on that boat and go over to that island over there and have a nice fight? Because we need more room.
I think we need more room.
And it's fighting without fighting.
That's That whole thing is like very, that sequence is very, you can see the influence there and do a lot of stuff.
And I love the fact that you see that guy get the shit kicked out of him by Williams later in the movie.
Yeah. He doesn't even fight Bruce Lee.
Just putting a hurting on him.
It seems like the 70s were ripe for these kind of like, behind the scenes stories, like crazy shit. Like, yeah, I mean, extras were fighting Bruce Lee.
The thing about the 70s, Dave, is it was a cool time.
Dangerous time. I don't know if I would have been comfortable filming a movie in the 70s. Like, if some crazy extra would have fought me, or like, it seems like a dangerous time to be an actor in the 70s.
It's a dangerous time.
When you have all
like,
these crazy
like
directors
anyone,
like doing crazy shit to their actors and stuff.
You're gonna have Clint Booth come over and try to fight you. You know.
God, that movie rules.
Jesus. But like, it does, like, it's interesting, like, it does seem like things are crazy, but like, it does give this, I gotta admit, it does give this aura to the movies of this generation where you're just like, I mean, I hate to say it, but it was like when people say shit like, oh, that was back when men were men and shit like that. Like, I guess it has that masculine vibe to it, like that machismo vibe that like you just sense while watching these movies. And it's like, I don't necessarily condone a lot of that stuff, but like, it does give the movie like this flavor.
I think what it has is just like a sense of authenticity. Like, yes. this isn't like a boardroom of executives thinking, oh, okay, what's big cool? And like what can we,
this is the cool people doing cool stuff.
Yeah. I mean, and even movies like John Wick, where you have, I mean, Keanu's incredible in it and doing amazing stunts. Even this is even a little different from that, where it's like Keanu is kind of like training to be this thing, and he does an amazing job to train and to do it, whereas Bruce Lee was just like already doing this kind of thing. Yeah. And
well, that's, I don't think, I 100% get what you're saying. I don't think John Wick's the perfect example. I'm not going to argue that necessarily, because Keanu Reeves had been doing martial arts for like 30 years by the point that John Wick started coming out. You know what I mean? Like, he was that guy too. He'd been a stunt dude since the Matrix movies.
He's,
you know,
the man,
I mean,
in Tai Chi.
Yeah, he's the man of Tai Chi. But no, I get you 100%. There's that authenticity. And even talking about like the masculinity thing, Dave, it's like that what you associate that with, that kind of toxic masculinity,
yeah.
Bruce Lee isn't in this movie.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I'm saying. Bruce,
but the movie itself,
the movie is.
The movie 100% is. There are sex slaves and they're like, which one do you want? And Williams is like, I'll take all four. I'm a little tired. And you're just like, Jesus Christ, guys. But Bruce Lee is not like, I'm gonna beat up everybody. He's like, no, I'm gonna, you know,
the art of fighting without fighting.
Yeah, exactly.
He seems pained, like when he like does that like jumping thing and like lands on, you don't really see what's happening and it zooms in on his face. He seems like he's troubled, this man.
Well, focusing his chi.
Well, it's interesting. Like, there's a lot of things I'm reading. Like, so like some backstory. Like, he had had a very serious back injury a few years prior to this movie, and that scene when the Scarface guy O'Hara grabs his foot and Lee does that like backflip. I think that was, if I'm not mistaken, that was the one action-y moment in the movie that Lee didn't do because of his back injury.
Oh,
so there's that. But also, like, he is doing the fight choreography for all the fights in the movie. So I gotta imagine, like, he's probably like tired as he's doing this shit. And like, also, like, if you watch the behind the scenes stuff, like, he was a complete perfectionist. Like, that's the moment when he's like doing the shit with the nunchucks. Like, they would do many takes. He had to get it perfect. And when you watch the movie, you're like, that, yeah, he's perfect.
Yeah,
in the movie.
Yeah. When he died, they did like an autopsy, to, you know, to figure out what the cause was. And one of the things they did find is that he had a lot of weed, like marijuana, in his system.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Uh-huh. So yes. I mean, which, you know, it was the 70s, so like
just hanging out with them Hollywood hippies.
Well, he was in Hong Kong, but yeah, I mean, I could see him just being like a general like high strung guy and trying to mellow out, you know.
Speaking to that side of him, like I just picture that famous T-shirt everywhere, Bruce Lee with like fucking headphones on and like doing DJ shit. Like I would have liked to have seen more of that side of him in movies like after Enter the Dragon.
I would have liked to gone to a party that Bruce Lee DJ'd.
Fuck yeah! Like I'm just picturing, like, we watched Pumping Iron recently. Like, I just imagined Bruce Lee and Arnold Schwarzenegger just like smoking a big doobie, like in a room and talking. You know,
I love him in a suit
because Bruce Lee was actually kind of a bodybuilder. Like, you see something like in his weight class, obviously. Like, he was the type of guy to be like, I need to like get my body in perfect shape. Like, everything needs to be perfect. Like, there's a scene in Way of the Dragon when he's just like, you know, stretching out, and you see like he has like that weird bodybuilder type physique a little bit when he does his back stretches and shit.
Yeah, he's got the big lats.
Yeah,
he looks good in a suit too.
Yeah,
he does. Yes, that 70s type of suit when he's talking to Braithwaite. I was thinking the same thing. Like, that's a handsome looking one.
Yeah, dude,
he looked handsome in anything.
Oh, dude, especially like the titular Bruce Lee look of just like bare chested and then like black.
Oh god, at the pants. Very end when he's in like that one piece and he just like takes the top off and it's like he's in the Kylo Ren, like
high waisted. It was a one piece, wasn't it, Michael?
a little behind the scenes.
I was fighting a brutal war over here. I was like, he's wearing a one piece. And and I was watching with you, David, obviously, and they're no, it's not. That's not a one piece. I think it's two parts. I'm like, that doesn't make any fucking sense. Look what he's doing. It's a one piece. He's wearing a ninja one piece.
Yeah, he's.
Well,
it
sounds like we're wrapping up, but there's one last thing we probably need to touch upon that we haven't mentioned even once. That is like so this movie, the Room of Mirrors.
Oh yeah.
That is such an iconic thing from this movie, and it's really well shot. And another difference between the special edition and the one we watched in the theatrical, if you guys recall, there's a moment when Bruce Lee's fighting, he's like kick the guy, like they've had a bit of back and forth, and finally he's like. At a moment where he's just like, how am I going to beat this guy? Like, he keeps fucking with me. His teacher comes in. Yeah. Like, remember.
And he looks up.
And he looks up as if he hears him. Like, yeah. Teacher.
Remember, the enemy has only images and illusions behind which he hides his true motives. Destroy the image and you will break the enemy.
That scene is not in the theatrical cut.
I think the theatrical cut might be better.
Yes, I agree. In the theatrical cut, it just cuts to him going like, you see Bruce Lee's face and he just has a moment where he's just fed up like, fuck this. And he just like starts hitting all the mirrors.
That's funny because like, that line is like, it's funny that like Bruce Lee does that because it's like he takes the most literal interpretation. Like yes, the line is like he remembers the master is like, you must not let evil hide behind its illusion, which like is like I don't know, like remember Donald Trump, it's like, hey, the way to get to him is like, don't realize he's not actually a smart rich businessman, right? Like he's a moron. But Bruce Lee hears that and he's like, okay, I must destroy all the mirrors.
Yeah, I think your heart was in the right place, Michael, but I'm not sure that quite tracks.
No, he's saying evil people hide behind illusions. And yeah, like,
destroy the image, and you will destroy the enemy.
Yeah, destroy the image that you're trying to protect. Like your opponent is not the image they're trying to put up.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
It makes perfect sense.
No, I think I get you. Yeah.
But yeah, it does play a lot differently in the theatrical version. It's kind of interesting. It's one of those things where I feel like each version has pros and cons. But there is like a certain cheesy quality to him literally looking up as if he's hearing his master like, telepathically talk to him or whatever.
Papa?
Yes, like, oh, master. Like, it's funny, but at the same time, it's just like...
Unless we had been given to believe that the master could do that. Like, if yes. He could project himself across great distances... And like he's like, I am centered myself with oneness.
Yes.
And I'd be like, all right.
It gives the movie like almost like a supernatural like element to it. But again,
which it should have anyways, because this guy has a hand and he's got claws and stuff.
If they had set it up in Fortnite, it might have made sense. But
yeah, you got to make sure you have a prologue in Fortnite. Yeah,
but yeah, it's like I appreciate both aspects of it. But if I had to pick one, I would pick the version where he just gets fed up and just starts breaking the fucking glass.
I wouldn't even say fed up necessarily, because the whole like angle with him, right, is he's like not anger control, you know. Yeah. But that him working it out himself.
Dude, you mentioned that he's not all about anger. He's like, you know, he says spiritual content, not anger. There's a few moments in the movie where I'm just like, is he unhinged?
Because like, when he's talking to he jumps on that guy's like leg.
Oh, yeah, he jumps on
Yes.
I was certain they were gonna cut to it, and his head was gonna be exploded like a pumpkin.
Just this meat, just a fucking hamburger meat. On the
I
ground.
Wish, fuck, that would rule.
Well, it's like, there are those moments where he takes revenge, obviously, but I mean other moments. Like in the beginning, when he's talking to his master, he's like, when he says, "I do not fight" or "I do not hit," it hits all by itself. His master, do you remember this? His master he puts his hand on Lee's arm as it's raised, and like Lee just sort of like gives this look, like, "What the." Get your fucking hands off me. Like, he gives this look to his teacher, like, motherfucker. You know what I mean? Like,
oh, I don't think I saw that.
We'll have to rewatch the tape, but like, he gives this look where he's just like, are you touching me right now? Like, he just looks like he's ready to blow.
One of my favorites is the bullets don't hit back or something like that.
Yes. Yeah. To and O'Hara.
There's so many things in here. I was like, this is all this movie? Like, the Hall of Mirrors,
yes.
The big kick.
The Hall of Mirrors is
the one-inch punch. I didn't realize, like, all those things are in this
movie.
The
Hall of Mirrors was from, I mean, that's Lady from Shanghai. Like, it's that's the Orson Welles movie. Like, it's, like, the same sequence in this. Like, that had been done at this point.
But with Bruce Lee. I'm saying with Bruce Lee.
Right. It's you don't realize that because Bruce Lee only did 5 movies that, like, all of these crazy popular things that you see and know of him, it's like, yeah, most of them are in like 2 movies.
Yeah. It's interesting. That's another thing you bring up, Ryan, that I want to mention.
With Bruce Lee.
The super kick moment when he's fighting Han, like in like the hall of like his like trophies and stuff. There's this moment where it like closes up. It does a close up on Lee's face and he kicks Han literally out of the frame.
Yeah.
But it's like it looks like it's
and then he walks
sped up
off
or
frame.
Something. Yeah,
so there's crazy. A couple kicks in throughout the movie where Lee sends people flying and it
flying.
Rules.
But yeah. it's
like Captain America kicking people in Winter Soldier.
But in this moment, it's like it looks like a dummy. Like he kicks a dummy out of the frame. But it's just done with such velocity. You're like, that guy's head is off of his body.
Yeah,
right
his organs have splattered.
There's so much internal bleeding going on in this movie.
Yeah, he's liquid on the inside now.
It wasn't that he kicked his head off. His head went through his
he just collapsed his skull.
The guy's head, liquefied his head.
The only part of him that still remains is his metal hand.
Oh, God.
His like, cool fucking knife hand.
But, like, again, like, these are these iconic moments, and they absolutely hold up. Like, the music, everything is just like, pitch perfect.
Him with, like, the scratches on him.
Yes,
like, that's
yeah.
this movie. I'm like, everything, I'm like, damn, everything is, every iconography I've grown up with and seen in 100 different things is all from this movie. It's really crazy.
It's wild,
because this is his one American movie.
Yeah. It just really makes me wonder, like, because, like, again, we mentioned, like, this movie's really well shot and this and that, but, like, it feels like there's so much more he could have done. Like, imagine a Bruce Lee movie with, like, a big budget and stuff like that. Like, if he had had that James Bond budget.
What's, like, a really movie? Big director at the time who might have cast Bruce Lee in, like, an unconventional, like, breakout role, like, in the 70s? Like a...
Not as a martial artist?
Or maybe, but just, to, you know, like you know, Quentin Tarantino might put him in a movie in Kill Bill, but like in the 70s, was there anyone who, you know, like a Spielberg type or
George Lucas, he would have tried.
You think
George Lucas wanted to put Toshiro Mifune as Obi-Wan, but he didn't. He wasn't able to.
Bruce Lee
so
is Obi-Wan.
He would have definitely cast.
Who was it that did
Toshiro Mifune, by
Exorcist
the way.
And Sorcerer?
William Friedkin.
Freaking maybe? I don't know.
Yeah.
He was probably the biggest director of that time, really, or one of them.
Bruce Lee and Sorcerer? I'd be down.
Trying to think of other big 70s directors. You know, Scorsese is the biggest, you know, but I don't know.
Do you think he would have been in Rocky?
No, he's not exactly the same weight class as Rocky. Rocky's a heavyweight.
Stallone would have put him in Expendables, though, as an older guy.
Absolutely.
When he was in his like 60s or whatever it would have been, you know. He would have been in there.
God, we would have had like such a not even a renaissance, but a golden era of martial arts. If Bruce Lee hadn't passed away,
I mean, think of how much we got, how much martial arts became part of mainstream culture in the 70s, just with this movie,
right?
Yeah.
But I mean, like, right? So his example permeated the 70s, but it was like other people's takes on that. If he had been doing his takes for like all of the 70s, then the 80s would have been totally different. Like Jackie Chan movies would have been much more different in the 80s.
Well, 90s. Jackie Chan might not have been like as big, you know?
100%. It would have changed everything. But like, you think about how Bruce Lee became the thing in the 90s, and it was like, oh shit, we got another guy again. You know what I mean? Like, there wasn't. It was Jackie Chan. Well, there was not kung fu dudes except for like Steven Seagal, which
was like three ninjas and Ninja Turtles.
Exactly. It was white people doing martial arts, not you know, Asians. And it's like Jackie Chan was the only one. Then Jet Li comes and it's like, oh, it's a whole new thing. And then they start being like, hey, Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, what's up? You know, bringing wuxia movies and stuff over. But it's like, if he had been doing that the entire time, would that have all been like accelerated times a thousand?
And would he have gotten into choreography, more behind the scenes stuff? Like, what if he would have been involved in the Matrix or something, you know?
Oh god. Well, I was thinking, like, just if he had survived and lived and gone on to the more than likely crazy trajectory he would have gone on, would we even have imagine? I just imagine what the 80s would have looked like, because the 80s were dominated by like gigantic buff guys and Rambo. Would that even have happened if Bruce Lee hadn't died? Like, would the trajectory have changed?
Well, like, you think of like Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Yeah,
you know?
Well, would action movies have changed? Would they necessarily have gone
100%,
that route?
100%. Also, he'd probably be president.
That's true.
Which would have been cool.
President Lee.
Yeah, I like it.
Are we wrapping up, or do you guys have any other thoughts?
I don't know. I didn't really write down any notes because I was kind of sucked into this movie. Too, other than the part where I thought that I fell asleep at the end, where I was like, did I miss the ending of the movie?
You're like, hold on, did I lose consciousness for a moment there?
My only regret in this movie is that I didn't make popcorn.
Oh.
I was thinking that like halfway through. Like, pizza and ice cream. Dang.
It was a very weird random selection of things each of us were eating as we were watching this movie.
I don't even remember, did we eat anything?
You and I?
Yeah.
Where'd you find pizza?
Protein bars, you know?
Yeah. I was just shoveling protein powder into my fucking face.
My only complaints really are just like kind of the dropped plots, really, like especially of like the woman that was on the island too, like that's
mailing.
Nothing. But I thought it was fucking fun, and it made me want to watch more of his stuff.
Put that on the poster. You know, fucking. I thought it was fucking fun.
5 stars.
It's pretty cool. It's fucking fun.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. It's fucking fun.
So not that I'm stalling for time to avoid my fight to the death, but would we all recommend this movie?
Absolutely,
100%.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. I wish I saw it as a kid. I would have loved it, for sure.
Yeah, so. It's just thinking back about how much of my like childhood was built around Power Rangers and Jackie Chan movies. It's like, had I been able to see this, and I probably, honestly, had it been shown to me when I was a kid, I probably wouldn't have been able to sit through it, because it is an older movie. Like, you know what I mean? And like, there is that visual thing that sometimes can, it almost like feels like you're watching like a movie on Sunday morning. You know what I mean? Like, it has that weird kind of like, oh, I'm watching a movie on the afternoon. It's older looking. I don't have that recognition to it anymore. But when I was a kid, if it was a movie from the 70s, I was just like, I don't know. Except
there's a cultural gap. It's like watching a foreign film, almost watching a movie that's old.
Exactly. There's a visual language to it that automatically feels like you're like, oh, this isn't for me. This is old person movie. But had I been able to like get it early, like I'm watching these Jackie Chan movies and stuff. Had I been able to then like level up to see that, I'd been like, this is what a fucking man
level
is.
Up.
I probably would have stuck to karate way longer than I did.
Yeah. That's nuts that our basically like Power Rangers and Turtles were our kind of like
and Dragon Ball
intro to this kind of thing.
You keep saying Dragon Ball, but it wasn't. Dragon Ball was like when we were like
till later. Yeah.
Yeah. Like teenagers is when it was like, you know, I mean, some parts of America had Dragon Ball Z at like in 95 or whatever. But
yeah, I was watching Dragon Ball in like fifth grade for me.
Yeah. It wasn't until junior high.
So you'd have been like
me.
10 or 11, right? Fifth grade's 10 or 11. That would have been what? 2000?
Yeah, 99, I think, is when I started watching it.
Like, yeah, and that's like when it was on Cartoon Network. That was when, yeah, we're all like, oh.
I was a kid. Cool. Fifth grade counts as kids.
Yeah, no, you're still kids, but it's like, it's not the same, man. It's not the same.
Like second grade, I remember strictly the Saturday morning Power Rangers came out. Like, I remember going to school in second grade, going home, and everyone would be like, did you see that fucking shit? He fought a big pig man with like a big head and arms.
I'm imagining like 8-year-old Ryan, did you see that fucking shit?
With just a gigantic head. Somehow even larger than his torso now.
Yeah, it was just like, yeah. So that was.
I'm gonna cut together this footage with Linkin Park.
In a cool music video.
It'll be this band, yeah. Linkin Park. Yeah.
I've become so numb.
All right, I think you're trying to delay the conversation, Michael. We need to wrap this up.
All right, that was Enter the Dragon. Mike, I'm glad you enjoyed the movie, and I hope you received some good tips, because you'll need all the help you can get to win this tournament.
Okay, I'm ready. Let's do this! Who am I fighting first?
Fighting? Oh, no, you're not fighting anyone. All you gotta do is break this piece of wood with your hand.
Wait, what? That's it?
Yep.
What about all those other guys you were talking about? What the hell are they here for?
We mostly pay them to come inside and walk around to, you know, make the store look busy so it doesn't look like we're a struggling business.
Oh, I can't believe how big the selection is here.
Thanks, Bonecrusher. We're good. You can collect your rat skins at the door.
Okay, see ya! Same time next year, yeah?
So, all I have to do is break this wood, and I'm good.
Yep.
It's balsa wood.
I bet you 5 cheese cordilla crunches, you won't be able to do it.
There.
Oh, shit!
Congratulations, Mike. You have won the tournament and retained your position at Apocalypse Video.
Yeah, that was a close one.
I never doubted you, Mike. I knew you had it in you.
So, I have to do this every year, huh? And it's the same thing every time?
Technically, yes. But your second review will be much more difficult.
What do I have to break next time?
Balsa wood.
But it's a centimeter thicker.
Okay, and year 3?
Ooh, year 3 is even harder.
What, does the balsa wood go up another centimeter or something?
No, in year 3, you gotta break a slab of adamantium with your head.
Atta what?
I'm sure you'll be able to handle it, Mike. I have faith in you, but don't worry. That's 2 whole years away. Plenty of time to develop those deadly weapons of yours.
There wouldn't happen to be an HR department at the store I could speak to, would there? Ow!
Don't concentrate on HR lawsuits or you will miss out on all that heavenly glory.
What?
Be like water, my friend.
That's it. I'll give you an employee review. Did that feel like water, Dave?
I said emotional content, not anger.
Oh, shut the fuck up, Dave!
Your skills are extraordinary.